You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Vox and Hops Brutal North America is brought to you by Indie Merch Store.
I would take someone who's a decent musician who I get along with great over the best musician you could find who I can't stand. Because it's you realize that it's way more important. You're way happier. Things are just better, especially if you're touring and you live with them on a bus. Like that's most of the time. You're only on stage for maybe an hour or whatever. So it's the rest of the time you have to deal with these people. So if you can get into any young people out there, forget about the star guitar player, singer. They got to be good, but take the person you get along with first.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did. I am so damn excited for Vox and Hops Brutal North America, which is coming up throughout the week of June 21st to the 25th. There are 22 collaborative brews that are dropping on the market all across the United States and Canada. I have teamed up 22 Vox and Hops alumni with metal breweries to create unique brews for their bands. I am so damn excited for this. I can't wait for you to all see and taste and experience these collabs. It is truly amazing. For more information on Vox and Hops Brutal North America, head on over to my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And there's a whole bunch of stuff there. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They put on a bunch of sick shows throughout the year, but more than that, they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals, and that is the absolute truth. They have just started announcing new shows coming through Montreal in the fall. They got Ginger with Suicide Silence, you got All Them Witches. They have announced that Bloodbath will be coming through Montreal in spring of 2022, and they have just announced that Rammstein has been rescheduled for August 2022. I am so damn excited about that. I'm so stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more metalheads just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, why do I say this? It's because when someone is looking for a new podcast to invest their time in, what do? They scroll down and they read those reviews. If the reviews are favorable and reflect stuff that they love and like, they will most probably give that podcast a chance. So by you writing a review, you could be the person that sways someone to become a brand new Vox and Hops head. And that would be something that I would truly, truly appreciate. Now, in today's episode, I'm with Wayne Lozenak of Hatebreed. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 270.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today I'm with Wayne Lozenak of Hatebreed. I am very, very stoked to be with you, Wayne. Let's start with a very simple question of how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Besides the pandemic and everything being shut down, everything else is good. So far, so good.
It's all we can do is just be positive and keep, and that's a big part of Hatebreed. So.
Exactly.
Was it hard? Was there a moment where you guys are a band that spreads positivity? You guys are world renowned for that. Do you guys even hit dark days sometimes where you need to go back and listen to your own catalog?
There's plenty of those days, let me tell you. But we try and do the best we can. Overall, it's pretty good, but everyone has their ups and downs.
Absolutely, which is where I'm going next, the dark question, and then we'll just have fun. How did you exactly did you cope with this glorious year that is now behind us of 2020?
Well, we actually just finished the record before everything happened, so it was like all set. The record was done. We had a tour booked. We were leaving. It was like we were supposed to leave the end of March to do this world tour with Parkway Drive, and everything just came to a halt. So there's been nothing much going on since we already did all the music. It was like we spent so much time in the studio and everything, but we did come out with our own beer, which is right here, Breed Brew. Very tasty.
I love that.
So that's about all the band collectively did. You know, it was, you know, with no music going on. So it was something good.
Which is crazy for you guys, because you guys are a very, very busy band.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is the most I haven't toured since I started. It's insane.
Completely crazy. Let's talk about Breed Brew. Obviously, I saw this happen. I was super stoked. Before we go there, though, I want to hear about your very first beer. Do you remember the first beer you drank, Wayne?
The first beer I drank, I mean, obviously, there were like little sips here and there when you're a little kid, like someone would give you. But I do remember the first time I actually got drunk off of beer, and it was a 6-pack of Budweiser.
Whoa.
And
the whole 6-pack. Yeah.
The whole 6-pack. I finished it all. We each got, like, me and a couple of my friends got 3 6-packs each. And I drank it, got drunk, and I was puking the whole next day. that's my first experience with getting drunk off of a 6-pack of Budweiser and feeling my first hangover ever.
Take me to that first craft beer, something that opened your eyes, that beer could be more than Budweiser.
Well, actually, I'm not too much of a craft beer guy, I have to say. I'm kind of a Coors Light guy. I'm more of a, you know, quantity over quality, I guess. Cause when I go out with my friends, we drink a lot. So it's a lot easier to drink the Coors Lights and stuff like that. But the Breed Brew, I will say, is definitely a step above Coors Light. And it's not an IPA, but it's like a lager kind of pilsner. And it has just enough to where it has way more of a full bodied flavor, I guess you could say, but you could still drink a lot and not feel like you're weighed down.
Let's talk about this Breed Brew. How did this come together? How exactly did Hatebreed end up putting out a beer this year?
I believe it was our bass player, Chris Beattie. There is a brewery up in Southington, Connecticut, up near where he lives, called Witch Doctor Brewing Company. And he somehow got together with them. And I think they're like, you know, metal fans, hardcore fans, people. And then he said, you know, there's nothing going on. You guys are kind of slow. We're not doing anything. So what do you think about doing, you know, a collaboration with you guys? And they were into it, and it all worked out. From there, we had someone do the artwork, which, as you can see, looks pretty good.
It's super cool. It's so you guys.
Live for this lager, you know, little song lyrics in there. Your brew awaits you, you know, little subtle hints. And, having done that, we were actually able to do a few socially distanced events at the brewery. So it was kind of like a meet and greet / beer tasting kind of thing, which it was like the closest thing of having a show, like all fans together. They were super happy about it because they haven't gone anywhere the whole year either. So that was cool. And it's been working so far. It's available either at the brewery, some local stores are carrying it, but you could also order it online from Halftime Beverage.
Very cool.
If you, and they don't, I guess they don't ship to all states. There's certain laws where they can't or something, but check out to see if your state is available on there. You could order some up, and it's good. Even if you don't like beer, it's cool just to have the souvenir as a, you know, the can artwork.
It's happening so much. Me being involved, you know, Cryptopsy, we have a craft beer. Voivod up here in Montreal has a craft beer. A bunch of us are doing it. I love it. It's like an extension of the band. It's a way to, you know, dig deeper into the creativity, the creative process of creating an album versus creating a beer. I am also going to be drinking a Connecticut beer. This is from Lasting Brass. This is their Squirrel Masters. It is their peanut butter chocolate porter. Really, really enjoy this style of brew, and it honestly hasn't taken off up here in Montreal at all.
Do you know where in Connecticut that's actually from?
Yeah, it's from Oakville.
Oakville, okay. That's up by kind of in the same area of the Witch Doctor. Similar.
Take me through the whole process. You guys were there on canning day. Was this the first time that you went to a brew house? Your first real experience of how beer has been made? Was this the first time?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was cool because they came it was like pallets and pallets of these empty cans with no tops on them. So we're just, you know, it was like just the assembly line. We just put all the cans there. I have it on video somewhere. I think it might be on my Instagram if you search. And it just, you know, they put the beer in, tops get put on, we wipe them down, and it just, it was, it actually took like a couple hours of that, like nonstop. But that was definitely cool to see, be a part of it.
Oh yeah, you got to do it right. If not, the beer gets all fucked up. It gets all oxidized. Cheers, right. Wayne.
Cheers.
Afternoon beers. I love it. Ooh, I smell the peanut butter.
Yeah, I don't usually drink this early. I just woke up like a little while ago, but it's just for a special occasion.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate it. This is phenomenal. 6% ABV, creamy, chocolatey. The peanut butter kicks on the nose. I love it.
I do like peanut butter. Maybe I'll have to check that one out.
It's very, very cool. What is the ABV on Breed Brew?
It's only 4.5%.
Perfect.
But that's why I said you could drink a lot of them.
Just highly crushable. And when you guys were putting together this recipe, how much involvement did you have? What was it like an inner argument? Like, no, we want to make an IPA because everyone makes IPAs. Or did you guys easily decide upon this easy crushable? You can have a bunch of them.
Yeah, I think that was more the thing because we all, like some of the guys, like Matt Byrne, he'll drink some IPAs every once in a while. Beatty, sometimes. Frank's pretty much Budweiser kind of guy. Jamie doesn't drink at all. So yes. He's the only one in the band. He doesn't even drink. So I think we wanted to just have something that was kind of would be more palatable for more people, which we might actually come out with some type of IPA later on. We're talking about doing a non-alcoholic one. So this was just the first to kind of experiment to do something that a lot of people would like. And I've actually heard from people that do drink IPAs that they like this one too. So it's kind of like a good combination.
Well, it's definitely, you guys are on trend because a lot of these heavy IPA drinkers are into it because of the hazy craze. And those are just sweet, sweet, heavy beers, high ABVs. So you have 2-3 of them and you're done. Whereas these ones are crushable. You can have 3-4 of them. And, you know, it's like listening to music. You know, the older you get, the more you are of a metalhead. You want to go back and hear the simpleness, right. And the refined tastes of metal. So you go backwards, and that's where, you know, lagers are really taking off.
Especially if you're out somewhere, like if you're at a show or something, and you're just you're not even thinking, you're just drinking, watching the band, having a good time. So you don't want to be all full and bloated by the end of the night.
No, you don't. No. And I do think it's very interesting what you guys are doing as well, because you guys made an Instagram page for Breed Brew, which is, yes, led me to think, is this a collab or is this like a whole new brand, like a relationship that you've made with Witch Doctor Brewing, where you guys are creating a new brand that is Breed Brew, that is going to have IPAs, that's going to have the lager, the live for this lager, a non-alcoholic brew for, you know, like, I'm curious about that.
Right. That's what we're hoping.
Very
like
cool.
I said, if the people want it and there's a demand for it, I guess, we'll keep doing it, which it helps everyone out. It helps us out, especially now because nothing is going on, and the brewery, it helps them out to get stuff going. And then the fans, just, it's something for them, something, you know, new and different. So we're hoping on it.
I think it's awesome. And, you know, BrewDog did a great job with their Ghostwalker IPA. It's probably one of the best non-alcoholic beers that I've ever had. When I, you know, I had Randy on to talk about that. And when I spoke to Jamie on the podcast, he hinted at that this was coming. So a non-alcoholic beer that he can enjoy would be something really cool too.
Right.
Because there's a bunch of people out there that love craft beer, but they also like that option of not having alcohol all the time.
Exactly.
Very exciting. I love it. This is a Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops episode. Let's talk about Montreal. Do you have any vivid memories of your first time playing Montreal, a special memory of Montreal that you'd like to share with the Montreal folks that are listening?
It's always great there, I could tell you that. Playing every time we play there, it's on any tour we've done, the shows are packed and the crowd is really into it. Heavy Montreal is a great festival, and I wish they had more like that in the U.S. Uh-huh. Seems like they're starting to do here and there in the U.S. but that's definitely good. And then there's Fafoon's. Have you been there?
Of course. Yeah,
that's always a good time. There's some stories I don't think I can tell because I don't want to get anyone in trouble, but that's something that sticks out. We were there on tour with like Sworn Enemy and all this stuff, and we had a good time, but we'll just leave it at that. Actually, we're there, I think, Five Finger Death Punch too on that tour. We rolled through there, and that's like a fun, like, because we don't have many metal, like, rock bars like that in Connecticut, or there's, I don't think there's any, unless you put the, unless there's a band playing or you put money in the jukebox and you try and make it one. But that's like going to a, like a metal bar, like specifically where it's like, you know, it's tons of metalheads, you know, hanging out. It's just, it's like a cool scene. It's that's always great going, you know, going to places like that.
Absolutely. Fofun is a classic. It's the CBGBs of Montreal, basically. And it's right next to a bunch of venues. You know, Metropolis is right next door now.
Called yeah, we've played there. Yep.
That's Club Soda. Club Soda is another one right down the street. Yep. So it's prime stomping ground for any bands coming in. And especially if it's Metropolis, MTELUS now, the buses park right behind it. So you can just crawl right back home.
Exactly. I've definitely done that.
I want to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Well, actually, funny enough, my father is the one who pretty much sent me on this journey of getting into heavy metal, if you will, because Kiss, he had Kiss albums, and that was it. I saw, you know, saw the makeup and the fire and the blood, and I started listening to that. So that's what got me into this music, you know, all to get, you know, together. But like my father would listen to, he listens to stuff like, you know, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, David Bowie, you know, typical like rock, Cream, stuff like that. And then my mother would be listening to like Donna Summer, Diana Ross, and like, you know, more, you know, more stuff like that. So it was kind of a combination of that type of music as in my early childhood.
I love that. And honestly, Kiss and the Beatles are always the top answers. If I were to like put them all in like a graph somewhere, those would come up at the top easily. What was your first love? What was the band that became your first band that wasn't influenced by someone else?
After Kiss, I just started listening to, like, I was into metal like as like a young kid. Like I remember when I was in second grade, like listening to Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Ozzy, and just all that stuff I just loved, right? And then like Def Leppard, and then a little later on Motley Crue. So it was just, I just loved it all. There wasn't, I don't think there was really one I could pick, but it was just all that. Because back in the day, you know, MTV would play these bands. So as a little kid, you'd see like whatever Men at Work and the Police and all that. But then you'd see like Iron Maiden or Judas Priest, and it was like these, you know, crazy metal guys that just always appealed to me as a even a little kid.
They were gods, and they were, you know, it wasn't like you had to wait up to watch it. It was interspliced throughout the day.
Exactly.
Big difference to what I grew up with, where with Headbangers Ball, you had to wait for that show.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, crazy. Let's talk about your first show. Do you remember the first show that you went to go see?
My first show was right before my 10th birthday. And it was Kiss.
Perfect.
On the Lick It Up tour, and Accept Balls to the Wall album, they opened up. That was my first concert. It was New Haven Coliseum. And then literally like 2 or 3 weeks later at the same place, I saw Judas Priest on Defenders of the Faith tour with Great White opening up, who I didn't even know who they were. I think they were on their first album. So those two I saw within in the same month of my 10th birthday.
Cool parents, Wayne.
Yes. that was cool.
How about your first time on stage?
My first time. Well, I guess we're going to have to go back to high school when I was 14. I was in a cover band and we played. It was like the high school. It was called Spring Weekend, and we were freshmen, and there were like other bands. The older kids like went on after us. So we had to go on at 11 a.m. in the morning. But we played, we were like the heaviest band on there, because we were doing like, we did Metallica, Black Sabbath. I think we did Rush, Ozzy, and stuff like that. And then, you know, the other bands did, I don't even know, one of them did like Billy Joel, but they did some metal stuff. But that was my first time, and there were people there to see us. It's the first time I heard people cheering. It was definitely nervous, because I was actually singing at the time too. So I was singing and playing guitar. We were a three piece. The band was called Minotaur. And this was actually, I think I might've just turned 15 and they were 14. This was like 1989.
Wow.
At freshman year of high school. So that was my first time ever on stage.
How about that Kiss show right before your 10th birthday? Was it like, I'm going to be on stage eventually? Did you have the bug then, or were you just a pure fan?
I was hoping, that was another thing. My father used to kind of play guitar, so he had one around. So I would kind of just bang on it and just make a lot of noise. So I've always been interested in playing the guitar, and the whole, you know, metal music scene always appealed to me. So I think, yeah, I was hoping someday that would be me.
Did you sing out of necessity? A lot of people I've been speaking to that weren't singers or ended up being singers sang because they had to, because they had no other people to find.
When I was 12, that's when I discovered Metallica, and James Hetfield was one of my biggest influences. I thought he was the greatest, coolest thing ever back. That was when Master of Puppets came out. So I kind of emulated myself, kind of left with James Hetfield, I guess. So playing guitar, but I also played solos. So my two is biggest influences are James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett. So the combination of them and Randy Rhodes, I loved a lot too. So I wanted to sing back then, but then later on, it was just I'd rather just play guitar. And plus, I was in a cover band. We had a couple originals, but they weren't anything great. And my first high school band.
Being from Montreal, it's super easy, or was easy, to find like-minded musicians, to start bands. Was it like that in Connecticut back in the day?
There was a few. It wasn't a ton of people. I'm talking my early high school, because we were so young. But then, I joined Hatebreed at the beginning first, I left, came back up, that whole thing. So, but at that time in the hardcore, there were tons of musicians. We would go to hardcore shows every weekend, and there would be almost everyone in there was in a band. So there was tons of musicians. That's the early '90s, which in that style and that camaraderie of the musicians, there was tons. But in high school, there was a few here and there. But I had my two solid friends that are still my best friends to this day that I played with in high school. So it was just us three piece. We always thought about trying to get another singer, but no one really worked out, or even another guitar player. But it was just, worked, with your friends. That's the best thing. If you get into a band with your friends, that just makes everything better.
So you're still friends with the guys from Minotaur?
Yes.
That's so cool.
They're twins, too.
Oh, wow. Wild. Yeah. And it's important, and that's a very good lesson for anything. It's, as we get older, we quickly learn, as we're in a band, that we have to be friends to make this work.
Oh, yeah. I would take someone who's a decent musician who I get along with great over the best musician you could find who I can't stand. Because you realize that it's way more important. You're way happier. Things are just better. Especially if you're touring and you live with them on a bus.
Oh yeah.
That's most of the time. You're only on stage for maybe an hour or whatever. So it's the rest of the time you have to deal with these people. So if you can get into so any young people out there, forget about the star guitar player or singer. They got to be good, but take the person you get along with.
Good humans first. Good humans first.
Yeah.
Because you got to live definitely. With that. You got to live with that good human for 23 hours. And then you enjoy.
Exactly.
And then you can enjoy the excellent musician for that 1 hour. So you got to find
exactly.
that balance.
Right. Because then you're going to end up either quitting or getting kicked out anyway. So
for fighting.
You have to start from the beginning again.
What would have been the last show that you went to go see or play? I don't know if you guys, I wasn't sure if you guys were on the road before the pandemic.
We didn't play. Our last show we played was October 2019.
Okay.
And that was a Dropkick Murphys Clutch tour. Because right after that, we went into the studio and started recording. So we were in the studio. We haven't even played since then. But the last show I went to was Jeff Tate doing he did the full Empire album and full Rage for Order album, I think. And it was in this place in Fairfield, Connecticut, this little theater hall. So that was the last show. That was February of 2020, I think. And then that was it.
The biggest rest that our ears have had, Wayne.
Yeah.
Our ears are just happy.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
I would like to talk about your iconic riffs. I had Michael Amott on. I asked him the same question. I believe that you are in the same field as this. In a different world, same field. You know, Amott has killer, killer melodic riffs that are just album after album. I asked him, where does he come up with these? You know, where does he find the inspiration? Same thing for you. I was listening today to Weight of the False Self and that title track. That riff, it's simple. It's caveman music, as Jester would say. But it's so damn catchy.
Actually, believe it or not, Jamie and Beattie write most of the music for the band.
Killer.
Like, we'll get, like, they'll, like, we all have ideas, but they're have the main, like, riffs. So then we'll get in the studio. Like, now, it's not like the old days where we jam in the basement or whatever. So now we just go into the studio. They have their ideas. Jamie will, like, grab a guitar and he'll, like, kind of show me his ideas. And then I'll, you know, try and, like, put him into a thing where, like, you know, be like, so you want to go like this, or sometimes we'll even hum stuff,
yeah,
like that, like his ideas, and then we'll play. And then BD has a lot, and then we get together and we like put them all together in the studio. And then so they're actually, they've always been like the main songwriters, which is people, you know, and Jamie writes all the lyrics too. Mm-hmm. So they're the main thing. Like I wrote all the solos, the guitar solos. And I wrote the on this last album, I wrote the intro and the main riff to The Herd Will Scatter, which if you listen to it, it's a little more metal. Mm-hmm. But it's like, but mostly they're mostly, it's their like their bass riffs, and then we put them together like while we're sitting around. Just that's the formula. Like I said, it works now, so it's like we don't want to change
no
the formula. And we record it as we're going, so we could try different things, try different drum beats, slow it down, speed it up. So this way, this is all during pre-production. And Zeus, towards the album, he has a big hand in it too. He'll tell us like, "Nah, don't do that. Maybe you should try this instead, and maybe put this part like that." So it's a big collaboration of us putting the songs together, but it's mostly actually Beattie and Jamie's riffs from the bass.
The iconic riffs. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. Let's talk about this new record, The Way That the False Self. It dropped November 27th via Nuclear Blast. You guys pushed it back. Right, it was supposed to come out during the summer, early in the pandemic.
It was supposed to come out in May, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk me through your mindset. I asked Jamie the same question, so I'm curious if you're on the same page, about holding on to the record, what that felt like, and then finally releasing it.
Well, yeah, we were all like super excited when we were finished, because I think this is like, this album came out great. Like the guitar tone that me and Zeus came up with in the studio, it's bigger, it's heavier. And just the songs, I think, like, we were just so excited to get out. Even, like, the solos. Like, there's the song Cling to Life where, you know, we're not really known for our solos. But, you know, Jamie will be like, "All right, in this song, I want a solo from here to here." So, you know, I sat down with Zeus and, like, I tried to do different things. And he's like, "Oh, no, keep going. It's more." I'm like, "More? It's longer?" I'm like, "Wow, I get to play this long solo." So that was, like, cool and different. And then we were all set to go on this huge tour with Parkway Drive. Like, we were going to go to Europe. Then we were going to come back, do a small U.S. run headline. We were going to go to Australia after that, back to Europe for the festivals, and then a full U.S. tour in the fall. And then everything just came to a halt. So it was like, even the record label, I think, kind of shut down. They mm-hmm. only put out a couple things. So we couldn't even put it out anyway. So it was definitely, because you can't tour on it. So it's, you got to promote it somehow. Luckily, we did have a song come out on Valentine's Day. It was just a standalone single called When the Blade Drops.
Yep.
And it's like streaming only, which I thought was kind of weird. It's not even on the album. But I guess this is a new thing that these streaming services do to try and get something I don't know.
Creating the hype. I actually feel that, actually, because I hate listening to a single before an album comes out. I feel like it kills the momentum of the album because I'll skip it.
Yeah, you get sick of it. That's true. I never thought of that, actually. But that was, so that was cool. And that one had a solo in it too, which I was happy. that was a good song. But it would be cool to even just have some kind of single, like even like vinyl with that song on it, and maybe some live tracks or something. But it's literally like, if you don't stream music, you don't hear it.
Which, you know, a lot of our fans, Cryptopsy fans, Hapey fans, the older generation might not be into streaming yet.
Right. But at least we had something come out with the sound and, you know, something to look forward to. And then, it was shut down. It was definitely a big disappointment. But I was happy we actually got it out in November, even though we couldn't do much promotion for it. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's, at least the fans had something to kind of give them.
They need it, especially the positive messages that you guys push. It's needed during this pandemic. So I think it's
And this was written before the pandemic. So people were always like, oh, he must have had some influence. I was like, no, this was, maybe he's like a psychic. And he was like, you know, saying it was going to, predicting it was going to happen.
Hey, Jamie knows what's going on. There would be no Vox and Hops if it wasn't for the Jazz to show. So avid fan. I told him I presented him with a sandwich when I had my interview with him, because I owed him a sandwich for inspiring me to starting podcast, a metal podcast. I added the beer, but the metal podcast was his idea.
Nice.
Speaking about when Jamie's doing podcasts, I know my band would get rather irritated with me if I would commandeer the bandwagon or a backstage space when I'm conducting interviews, when I'm on the road. How does that go down when Jamie's on the road with you guys?
He does sometimes commandeer the back lounge of the bus, which, you know, whatever, he'll do it on there and sometimes in the dressing room. But I try and stay, if we're not driving, I try and stay off the bus anyway, as much as possible. I mean, sometimes you just go in your bunk, you put your ear pods in, you don't hear anything going on anyway. So it's not really a problem, but yeah, he definitely takes over some spots here and there, but yeah, whatever. Not a big problem.
Let's talk about a live stream. Is that something that interests Hatebreed? Is that something that interests you? I feel like it needs to be special if we're going to do it, which is why Cryptopsy's never done anything like that.
I've thought of, like, I would do it if the band was in agreement to do it. But for us, it's more about, like, the live show is not the same if you're just sitting on your couch and there's no audience. Like, the audience is a big part of our show, especially. They want to mosh. They want to jump all over each other.
Yes, they
want to
sing,
you know, get the aggression out. We're not like Dream Theater where you could sit and be like, wow, that's really cool time signatures. And those arpeggios are really tasteful. And, you know, we're more of an energy, physical type band. It's like a lot of people even said, someone just said this, like made a comment or whatever the other day. They're like, I listened to Hatebreed and I'm like, yeah, it's okay. And then I saw the live show and then I understood it. Because it's like you need the whole experience to really get what we're about.
It's the energy,
especially coming from the hardcore scene. It's about the energy and everything else. It's not really about how many scales you can fit into a song.
We played Festival d'été au Québec, together a few years back, and man, were they crazy that night. I was manning the merch table helping out for a moment, and the crowd was just insane for you guys. It was so much fun.
That's another good thing about us. We can play these festivals. We can play with like hardcore bands one day, death metal bands another day, and then, you know, radio rock metal bands, whatever, and we somehow fit in with all of them and we get people to like us. So that's a big plus of being in this band, which, like I said, if you don't see the live show, you won't understand, because if you just listen to, you like, how are they playing with them? But it just works, and that's a great part of being in this band.
And you put the work in. You guys toured with so many people, so many markets, so many different bands, just, you know, getting the name out there and perfecting the live show and the energy That's just years of experience. So you guys put the work in, so you deserve everything that's happening. Let's talk about a plan B. Obviously, plan A worked, you becoming an internationally renowned, known musician. If that didn't work out, if the guitar, if Minotaur, you know, didn't start and you never really got that bug and were hanging out with those twins and you ended up doing something else, what else would you be doing if you weren't a musician?
Well, I was a guitar tech before I came back as the playing in the band. Mm-hmm. I teched for Hatebreed actually first, and then I teched for a few other bands here and there before Sean quit. And they're like, Sean might be quitting, you want to come back? I'm like, yeah, you know, sure. I'm already here. I know most of the songs anyway. It kind of just smoothed right in. That was 2009. But before that, I owned one of those coffee lunch trucks. I don't know if they have them in Canada. They go to like the job site with the silver doors.
No way.
You sit there, the construction workers, you sell them coffee and egg sandwiches and all that. So I did that for like 8 years. I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day and just grinding that every, and it was pretty good. It's because it's like you're your own boss and you don't have to deal. You just got to deal with angry customers if you like run out of hot dogs or meatballs or something by the time you get there. But I didn't really have much of a huge career other than music and that. So I don't know what I'd be doing right now.
Crazy. I know myself when I go to shows, if I'm there to do interviews or stuff like that, when I could go to shows and I see my friends on stage, I'm like, God, I want to be on stage. That must have been tough being a crew member. I always feel bad, like not feel bad for crew members, but
because this is the thing, since I was in the band at the beginning, but it was so different then. We were playing, you know, skate parks and teen centers and people's basements. And it was totally, I never would have thought the band was going to blow up to what it was. Like if you go back and watch those videos and you listen to like Under the Knife, which I played on that one, that was the EP. Like no way I would have thought this music was going to be huge and it was going to be a career. So it wasn't like, I definitely enjoy playing, but just to be out and working in within the music field, like plugging in amps and changing strings, I just enjoy being around it. So even just touring, being behind the scenes was still enjoyable, more enjoyable than selling some angry construction worker or an egg and cheese sandwich that he's going to complain about the price or something. So it didn't like bother me at all. I was just happy to be out there, especially I never left the East Coast until I started touring. And then I got to see the whole world and get paid for it. And party with all these bands that I used to look up to. Like I met all Exodus and all, you know, all these bands. I ended up teching for Exodus actually on a tour, Monster Magnet. So it was cool.
I see that. That totally makes sense. To be out there to you know, it's a completely different thing. And then you got to step out onto stage. Do you remember that first show when you being back, but at that higher level?
Yeah. The first show was a really small kind of like surprise show, kind of like a warm-up thing. It was in Massachusetts, this little club called Fat Cat. And it was cool. I was, you know, it was packed, people going nuts, little tiny club. We set up our own stuff. It wasn't like we had this big crew or anything. And then we did a couple of shows here and there, but then the first show of my first tour was Download Fest England in front of 80,000 people. So that's all right. You're doing your first tour. Here you go. And it was just like, and then my amp wasn't working. My tech was like trying to fix something was wrong. I'm like behind the amp going, I don't know. He's like, nothing's coming out. And the guy's yelling at me, the stage manager. But it was like one button was pressed in that shouldn't have been. Luckily we did it. But I think being a tech for bands, I was kind of almost used to being out there, even just checking the gear, like in front of the big crowd. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like so much of a shock because I had already been doing that for a couple of years. So I think it was almost natural. I just kind of just went right in and it just worked.
It's so much fun. It's so awesome. So awesome how it all happened for you. Let's wrap this up with a classic Vox and Hops wrap up question. It probably never happens to you because, you know, you don't start drinking at 2 p.m. normally. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Lots of water. That's it. Water and rest. Like I usually, if I'm too hungover, I barely get off the couch. So it's couch and water. That's really, really all I could do. And it's waited out.
Wayne, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with me, talking about your life, music, and craft beer. I want to give a shout out to Jim and Corey from Crush Kill Destroy, who helped me set up this interview.
There
so massive cheers to the Connecticut boys.
Cheers.
I really appreciate it.
Cheers, Wayne. Connecticut in the house.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. I had such a great time connecting with Wayne. We have played some gigs together across the globe, actually, and it was great to finally catch up with him and to actually have a conversation, because sometimes even when you're playing with someone, you don't have a chance to actually sit down and have a conversation with them. I will most likely be doing that the next time Wayne is anywhere near me, because I had a great time connecting with him. Definitely head on out there and get your hands on the Breed Brew, which is made by Witch Doctor Brewing Company. I actually managed to get my hands on one, and it was delicious. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I dropped throughout that week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, any information about any cool projects I have going on, such as Brutal North America, as well as the links to the Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs and the updated links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify and is curated by my man Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. So please do me a favor and sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list, because there's just so much going on in the world of Vox and Hops right now. I would hate for you to miss a single thing. Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have two more episodes coming at you this week, one on Thursday and another on Friday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.